Mother's Questions and Answers, November 16th, 1955. This is part two of Mother's class. In this second half of the class, Mother answers the questions of someone who wants to know about the roles of our past evolution and the roles of our present nature in his practice of yoga. He goes on asking questions over and over, and eventually we find out that he wants to learn what is keeping him from progressing. In her answers, Mother speaks about the individual soul. She talks about how our psychic being is making its choices about where to take birth. And she also talks about how the being chooses the elements that it needs for the body and the personality it's going to have in life. In Savitri, Sri Aurobindo tells us about the place of creation's starting point, where the soul rests in between lives. He calls it resting in shining chambers of spiritual sleep. And he says, in trance, they gathered back their bygone selves. In a background memories, foreseeing muse, prophetic of a new personality, arranged the map of their coming destiny's course. Heirs of the past, their future's discoverers, electors of their own self-chosen lot, they waited for the adventure of new life. In one of his letters, Sri Aurobindo explains that from life to life, as we go on developing, we accumulate personalities. And of course, this is all directed by our very most central inner being, our soul. He says that these different personalities are not at all active in our nature in every life. Sometimes they are behind the active elements in our nature, and they only contribute some capacity or some trait, or some color here and there throughout our lives. Sometimes they're in front, and then we are a multiple personality, a many-sided character. And he says that like this, it can look like a universal capacity. If a former personality is brought forward in its fullness, if it's brought forward in another life, it will not be to repeat what was done before, but to cast the same capacity into new forms and new shapes, and to fuse it into a new harmony of being. Then the energies will be guided in a whole new direction to do something that was not done before. Sri Aurobindo wrote that the choice which our psychic being makes at the time of death actually fixes the next formation of the personality. After death, the psychic being enters the psychic world, and then it begins to assimilate the essence of its experience in that life. Our future psychic personality is formed by that assimilation of the personality that there was in the just past life. It's formed in accordance with the fixation made at the time of death. When this assimilation is over, the being is ready for new birth. And then Sri Aurobindo says that each time our soul takes a birth, a mind, a life, and a body are formed out of the materials of universal nature according to our soul's past evolution and according to its need for the future. When the body is dissolved, our vital, the collection of energies and patterns of our vital being, all go into the vital plane, and the vital remains there for a time. But after a time, the vital sheath disappears into its constituent elements. And of course, we know that our physical body decays, and it's dissolved in the same way, back into its constituent elements, into the elements made up of the elements of the earth. The last to dissolve is our mental sheath. And finally, the soul retires into the psychic world. And there, as Sri Aurobindo has said in that beautiful poem, it makes itself ready for the new life. So this is the general course for ordinarily developed human beings, which means most of us. In Savitri, he writes that in the world of the psychic, in the center of creation, all that is made and once again unmade, the calm, persistent vision of the One inevitably remakes. It lives anew. Forces and lives and beings and ideas are taken into the stillness for a while. There, they remold their purpose and their drift, recast their nature, and reform their shape. Ever they change, and changing ever grow. And passing through a fruitful stage of death, and after long reconstituting sleep, resume their place in the process of the gods until their work in cosmic time is done. So it's November 16th, 1955, Mother's Friday class, and this fellow who is so concerned about his own progress asks his first question. Sweet Mother, in the individual, do the past evolution and the present nature always decide the final intervention of a higher plane, which brings about a change? And Mother says, what kind of a question is this? I don't understand it very well. Past evolution? And he adds, and the present nature. And Mother says, and the present nature? It's not the same thing. They are two different things. And he says, no, Mother, because here it is written, quote, the mind's door of entry to the conception of him must necessarily vary according to the past evolution and the present nature. And Mother says, yes, these two things are completely different. That is, the evolution in former lives and the present nature, which is the nature of the present body, these determine one's approach to the divine. We can take an oversimple example. If one is born in any particular religion, quite naturally, the first effort to approach the divine will be within that religion. Or else, if in former lives one has passed through a certain number of experiences which determined the necessity of another kind of experiences, quite naturally, one will follow the path which leads to those experiences. You see, the life of the psychic being is made up of successive experiences in successive physical existences. So, it may be put a little childishly or romantically. You have a psychic which for some reason or other has incarnated so as to be able to have all the experiences which royalty gives. For instance, supreme power. After it has had its experience, has had what it wanted, it can, before leaving the body, decide that in the next life it will take birth in obscure conditions because it needs to have the experiences which can be had in a modest condition and with the freedom which puts one to the test when he has no responsibilities, you see. No responsibilities like those the heads of state have, for instance. So, quite naturally, in its next life, it will be born in certain conditions which fulfill its need. And it is in accordance with this experience that it will approach the divine. Then, in addition, it is the product of the union of two physical natures, you know, and sometimes of two vital natures. The result of this is more or less a kind of mixture of these natures. but it brings about a tendency, what is called a character. Well, this character will make it fit for a certain field, a certain category of experiences. So, with what has been determined, decided in former lives, or in a former life, and then with the environment in which it is born, that is, the conditions in which its present body has been formed, then its approach to and its search for the divine will be in accordance with a definite line which is its own, and which, naturally, is not at all the same as that of its neighbor or any other being. I said a while ago that each individual is a special manifestation in the universe. Therefore, his true path must be an absolutely unique path. There are similarities. There are resemblances. There are categories. There are families, churches, ideals also. That is, there is a certain collective way of approaching the divine which creates a kind of church, not materialized, but in a more subtle world. There are all these things. But for the details of the path, the details of the yoga, it will necessarily be different according to each individual. And it will be conditioned physically by his present constitution, his present bodily structure. It will be conditioned vitally, mentally, and psychically, of course, by former lives. And then this fellow asks another question. The present structure, Mother, is it that which decides the intervention of higher planes or not, in order to work miracles? And Mother says, that is to say, whether it is predetermined that the higher planes? And he says, the other day you said that it can change completely. And Mother says, yes. And he says, then, if the present remains like this. And Mother responds, but look here. Let's take an altogether ordinary example, which is very partial and very superficial. You are born in India. Being born in India, you are born with a certain religious and philosophic attitude. But if, for some reason or other, you want to free yourself from this atavism and influence, if you begin to follow, to study, to practice the religion or philosophy of another country, you can change the conditions of your inner development. It's a little more difficult. That is, it asks for a greater effort for liberation. But it is very far from being impossible. In fact, there are many people who do it, who love to free themselves from what comes to them from their present birth. By some sort of special taste, they like to seek elsewhere what they think they won't be able to find at home. And in this way, you change the consequences of your birth completely. Now, you may tell me that this taste for the new or the unknown can come to you from a former life. This is probable. But it depends on what dominates in your being, whether it is the result of former psychic lives and psychic resolutions, or whether it is the immediate consequence of your present constitution. And then this fellow says, but sometimes these present structures are contradictory to what was. And Mother says, contradictory? In what way contradictory? To former influences? It is never contradictory. It can be only complementary. When things seem contradictory to you, it is always because you have remained on too low a plane. If you know how to climb up a few rungs of the ladder, all contradictions disappear. Everything becomes complementary. And now we get the reason for his questions, he says, "But what prevents me from going on is the nature, isn't it?" And Mother says, "Eh?" Like she can't hear him. And he repeats his question, "But what prevents me from going on is the nature, isn't it?" And Mother says, "What prevents you? It prevents many people. It is not very easy. This is a part of the liberation. Liberation is attained through austerities. We know that. But there are certain austerities which people refuse to practice. For example, this." And Mother puts her fingers on her lips to show that people shouldn't open their mouths. Or perhaps it's in the age-old gesture that people make when they want to silence someone, they put their finger on their lips. And she says, "They talk, 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 much too much." And then loud noises of the wind in the microphone are heard, and Mother says, "We are going to enact a storm scene. That's how thunder is created on the stage." "There you are, my children. That's all. Who has a very interesting question to ask?" To ask an interesting question, one must begin by thinking in an interesting way. And a child asks, "Mother, what do you call an interesting question?" Mother says, "Ah, a question worth answering." And then there's laughter, and Mother says, "Something which raises the possibility of a new answer and of an opening on a new field of knowledge. For example, when you ask me for the explanation of a word, I find this is not an interesting question because you have only to open a dictionary. When you ask me the answer to a question which has been given by Sri Aurobindo or by someone else in published books, it doesn't seem to be an interesting question, because you have only to open the book and read. But when, for instance, you have a personal experience which you do not understand very well, and for which you need clarification, then your question can become interesting." And then there's a silence. And then finally Mother says, "No interesting question?" "So, nobody has an interesting question according to the definition just given?"
Cette question, je comprends pas très bien. L'évolution passée,
et
la nature présente, mais c'est pas la même chose, c'est deux choses différentes. Oui, c'est deux choses tout à fait différentes. C'est-à-dire que ça peut l'évolution d'un divise antérieur et la nature présente, c'est-à-dire la nature du corps actuel, ça détermine l'approche que l'on a du divin. On peut prendre un exemple très simpliste. Si on est né dans une religion quelconque, tout naturellement, le premier rapport d'approche du divin sera sous cette religion-là. Ou bien, si dans des vies antérieures, on a passé par un certain nombre d'expériences qui déterminaient la nécessité d'un autre genre d'expérience, tout naturellement, on suivra le chemin qui vous conduit vers ces expériences-là. N'est-ce pas, la vie de l'être psychique est faite d'expériences successives dans des existences physiques successives. Alors, on peut, n'est-ce pas, le dire d'une façon un peu enfantine ou romanesque. Vous avez un psychique qui, pour une raison quelconque, s'est incarné de façon à pouvoir faire toutes les expériences que donne la royauté, le pouvoir suprême. Après ça, il a fait son expérience, il a eu ce qu'il voulait. Il peut, avant de quitter le corps, décider que dans la vie suivante, il naîtra dans des conditions obscures parce qu'il a besoin d'avoir les expériences que l'on peut avoir dans une condition modeste et avec la liberté que l'on éprouve quand on n'est pas... quand on n'a pas de responsabilité. Ou, n'est-ce pas, de responsabilité comme celle qu'ont les chefs d'État, par exemple. Alors, tout naturellement, dans sa vie suivante, il naîtra dans certaines conditions qui rempliront son besoin, et c'est selon cette expérience-là qu'il fera son approche du divin. Alors en plus, il est le produit de l'union de deux natures physiques, n'est-ce pas, et quelquefois de deux natures vitales. Le résultat de ça est plus ou moins une sorte de mélange, n'est-ce pas, entre ces natures. Mais ça produit une tendance, ce que l'on appelle un caractère. Eh bien, ce caractère le rendra propre à un certain champ, à une certaine catégorie d'expérience. Alors, avec ce qui a été déterminé, décidé dans les vies ou la vie antérieure, et puis le milieu dans lequel il est né, c'est-à-dire les conditions dans lesquelles son corps actuel s'est formé, son approche et sa recherche du divin seront selon une ligne définie qui lui est propre et qui naturellement n'est pas du tout la même de son voisin ou de n'importe quel autre. Je disais tout à l'heure, chaque individu est une manifestation spéciale dans l'univers. Par conséquent, son chemin véritable doit être un chemin absolument unique. Il y a des analogies, il y a des ressemblances, il y a des catégories, il y a des familles, il y a, n'est-ce pas, des églises idéales aussi, c'est-à-dire qu'il y a une certaine façon collective d'approcher le divin qui produit une sorte d'église, non pas matérialisé, mais dans un monde plus subtil. Il y a toutes ces choses-là, mais pour le détail du chemin, le détail du yoga, ça sera différent suivant chaque individu, nécessairement. Et conditionné physiquement par sa construction présente, corporelle présente, et vitalement, mentalement et psychiquement, certainement, par les existences intérieures. C'est-à-dire, si c'est prédéterminé que ces plans supérieurs...
Vous avez dit que ça peut changer complètement.
Mais ce n'est pas encore pour prendre un exemple tout à fait ordinaire, là, qui est très partiel et très superficiel. Vous êtes né dans l'Inde. Étant né dans l'Inde, vous êtes né dans une certaine attitude religieuse et philosophique, n'est-ce pas? Mais si, pour une raison quelconque, vous voulez vous libérer de cet atavisme et de cette influence, si vous vous mettez à suivre, à étudier, à pratiquer la religion ou la philosophie d'un autre pays, vous pouvez changer les conditions de votre développement intérieur. C'est un petit peu plus difficile, c'est-à-dire que ça demande un plus grand effort de libération, mais c'est très loin d'être impossible. Il y a en fait beaucoup de gens qui le font, qui aiment à se libérer de ce qui leur provient de leur naissance présente par un goût spécial quelconque. Ils aiment à chercher ailleurs ce qu'ils ne pensent pas pouvoir trouver chez eux. Et de cette façon-là, vous changez complètement les conséquences de votre naissance. Maintenant, vous pouvez me dire que ce goût du nouveau ou de l'inconnu peut vous venir d'une vie antérieure. Ça, c'est probable. Mais ça dépend de ce qui domine dans votre être. Si c'est le résultat des vies psychiques antérieures et des résolutions psychiques, ou si c'est la conséquence immédiate de votre construction actuelle. Contradictoire? Comment contradictoire? Avec l'influence des influences précédentes? C'est jamais contradictoire, ça ne peut être que complémentaire. Ça, c'est parce qu'on a... Quand les choses vous apparaissent comme contradictoires, c'est toujours parce que vous êtes resté à un plan trop bas. Si vous savez monter quelques échelons d'échelle, toutes les contradictions disparaissent. Tout devient complémentaire.
Ce qui gêne de partir, c'est la nature.
Hein?
Ce qui me gêne de partir dans le plan.
Ce qui vous gêne, ça gêne beaucoup de gens. Je n'ai pas trop peur. Ça fait partie de la libération. La libération s'obtient par les austérités. Nous savons ça. Mais il y a certaines austérités que les gens se refusent à pratiquer. Alors, ça. On parle beaucoup trop. C'est comme ça qu'on fait le tonnerre. Voilà, mes enfants, c'est tout. Qui a une question très intéressante à poser? Pour poser une question intéressante, il faut commencer par penser d'une façon intéressante.
Qu'est-ce que tu appelles une question intéressante?
Ah. une question qui mérite d'être répondue. Quelque chose qui suscite la possibilité d'une réponse nouvelle et d'une ouverture sur un champ de connaissances nouveau. Par exemple, quand vous me demandez l'explication d'un mot, je trouve que ce n'est pas une question intéressante parce que vous n'avez qu'à ouvrir un dictionnaire. Quand vous me demandez la réponse à une question qui a été faite par Cherubino ou par quelqu'un d'autre dans des livres qui sont publiés, ça ne me paraît pas une question intéressante parce que vous n'avez qu'à ouvrir le livre et lire. Mais quand, par exemple, vous avez une expérience personnelle que vous ne comprenez pas très bien et pour laquelle vous avez besoin d'éclaircissement, alors votre question peut devenir intéressante. Question intéressante. Alors, personne n'a une question intéressante suivant la définition qui vient d'être donnée.
Peut-être à l'individu.